us as scientists or engineers or practitioners in the field or decision makers, we spend most of our time dealing with technology and the type of subjects that has been discussed throughout the day. And sometimes we don't appreciate and don't pay enough attention to subjects such as policies that might affect our work and the protection and sustainment activities that we either research or develop or put in practice. And we have noticed that recently there has been policy activities that might have a significant effect in how we develop and put in practice the type of techniques that various speakers and our panel members discussed earlier today. So we thought it would be appropriate to end the day with that type of discussion to bring the subject matter to the front burner, because it may have interesting consequences for us as we continue our progress, both in the development of the subject matter and its putting it in practice. I will spend a few minutes to setting the stage by using some explicit policy events that took place in 2013 and ask the question why such policies might be important. I will then spend a little bit of time bringing to your attention some historical backgrounds of similar policy actions that have taken place over the last 40 or 50 years, and draw some conclusion, again, why us as researchers or developers or engineers or practitioners should start paying a little more attention to the policy issues in this area. And then I will revisit some of the specific policy action that took place in 2013 and finish with some closing thoughts and leaving you with some challenging questions. So last year on February 12th, when President was delivering his annual State of the Union address, as part of that speech, he issued an executive order which was titled Improving Critical Infrastructure Cybersecurity. He also issued an accompanying presidential policy directive with a slightly different title, Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience. That put in place other activities, including action to NIST for development of a cybersecurity framework that a couple of our panel's members discussed just a few minutes ago. So if you look at the titles of these executive orders, order and presidential policy directive, you see words that we've been talking about all day. Resilience, critical infrastructure, cybersecurity. And therefore, we should pay attention to them because they're important. We have learned our lesson from 9/11 that 85% of our nation's critical infrastructure is owned and operated not by government, but by private sector. Critical infrastructure is formally defined. Systems and assets, whether physical or virtual, so it's both physical and cyber. so vital to the United States that the incapacity or destruction of such systems and assets would have a debilitating effect on security, national economic security, national public health, etc. These are important things, things we use on a daily basis. Our power grid, our water systems, our health delivery mechanism, etc. The presidential policy directive is addressing issues of resilience to the critical infrastructure. This is a particular passage from the Presidential Policy Directive 21 from last February. The ability to prepare for and adapt to changing conditions. We talked about quite a bit today about how the risk environment has changed. To withstand and recover rapidly from disruptions. Resilience. So it's no longer just protecting the infrastructure, but we also want to be improve the resilience of the critical infrastructure. That's why it's important to pay attention to some of these policies. You know, there are 16 critical infrastructure sectors, anywhere from the sector that deals with chemical production and chemical processing to energy sector to water and water systems. When there are incidents, for example, when we look at how Hurricane Sandy affected critical infrastructure, of the 16 sectors in the critical infrastructure, at least 10 of them were directly affected by the kinetic disruption caused by the Hurricane Sandy. If you look at some recent cyber incidents also affect two, three, or four of the critical infrastructure. And therefore, it's very similar to the subjects we talked about earlier today. And therefore, if these policies affect how we sustain and protect our infrastructure, we want to pay attention to these policies. Also, if you look back in history, there have been other executive orders and policies that have affected things that are close to the community that we deal with. There have been policies affecting disaster recovery, disaster planning, crisis management, etc. And we think conditions are very ripe for these recent policy developments to drastically affect how we protect and sustain our critical infrastructure. So, let's look at some historical information to remind ourselves of how similar policies have played a role in the subject matter. So in this country, cybersecurity and resiliency regulations come from two different places. They either introduced as legislation that come from the Congress, or they are introduced as directives that come from the executive branch and from the president. So let's look at what has been happening on the legislation side, what has been happening in the Congress with respects to cybersecurity and resiliency regulations and policies. Well, currently, there are very few formal cybersecurity and resiliency regulations on the books that might have come from the Congress. In fact, I think there are only three main ones. And they date back to 1966 HIPAA regulations that affect healthcare organizations, the 1999 Gramm-Leach-Bailey Act that are primarily for financial institutions. And the last one is, again, somewhat old, from 2002, which introduced the FISMA activities, and it's mostly for federal agencies. So there is no recent policy that was put into books from the Congress. However, there's been lots of activities. You know, in the 111th Congress, there were at least 60 bills and resolution introduced, but none was approved. And again, in the 112th Congress, over 40 bills and resolutions were introduced dealing with subjects of cybersecurity. Again, no comprehensive cybersecurity legislation has been enacted since 2002. But the world has changed since 2002. The challenges have changed, the risk environment has changed, and therefore these recent executive orders may have an effect. So, executive orders. So that's the other source of regulations and policy that are introduced from the executive branch, from the president. Executive orders help officers and agencies of the executive branch to manage their operations. They're not new. Presidents issue, on the average, 100 executive orders during each term dealing with different subjects. They have full force of the law. They are issued by certain acts of a Congress that gives the president certain degrees of discretionary power to issue these executive orders, and they have the full force of the law. There are different types of executive orders. If the executive order deals with subjects dealing with national security, they often refer to as presidential directives. So this past February, we had both an executive order and a presidential directive, which tells us our federal government is considering issues of critical infrastructure protection and sustainment a national security issue. Let's look at some of the more famous executive orders that has affected the protection and sustainment activities that many of us have observed, have been involved with in its development and fielding. Back in 1963, President Kennedy issued a memorandum that established the National Communication System, the NCS. This happened right after the Cuban Missile Crisis. A critical event took place, Cuban Missile Crisis. The president thought we need to take some action to improve some of the shortcomings that were observed from a perspective of emergency communications. So NCS was created based on a presidential memorandum. In 1984, that memorandum was expanded and broadened the services that NCS provides. In fact, I'm sure many of you who are practitioners of disaster recovery and business continuity have GETS cards in your wallets for emergency communication in case of national emergencies. In 1988, Presidential Policy Directive 63 was the first time that the concept of critical infrastructure protection was defined and issued as a policy directive to make sure that there is a goal set, there's a national goal set to protect the national critical infrastructure. Department of Homeland Security was created based on a Homeland Security Act of 2002 in the aftermath of September 11 attacks and in the aftermath of the mailings of the anthrax packages. In 2003, there was a Presidential Policy Directive number 7 that created the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. HSPD-7, it focuses on how nations should have a goal to protect its critical infrastructure against terrorist attacks and physical systems. And let me give you one more example. In 2006, again, after a major incident, after Hurricane Katrina, there was an executive order in 2006 that expanded the capabilities of emergency communication systems in the country, that created the integrated public alert and warning system that now has been in place for a while. So you see there has been a number of executive orders and policy directives that has affected our work in protection and sustainment of the infrastructure. So let's go back and take a more detailed look at the executive order 13636 and a presidential policy directive 21 from last February. The executive order title was Improving Critical Infrastructure Cybersecurity, with an overall objective of enhancing the security and resilience. So again, we see that these policies, these new policies, have a new flavor, have a flavor of not only protection, but also providing resilience in the critical infrastructure. Same thing with the Policy Directive 21. In fact, its title is Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience. So one difference that we see in these new policies that were issued, or new policies and laws that are being considered, have a slightly more comprehensive flavor of not only protection, but also sustainment and resilience of critical infrastructure. All of those subjects that we have talked about today as part of the operational resilience discussion. If I was going to summarize the contents of both the executive order and the policy directive 21, these few passages points out the key aspects of these two policies. They talk about resilience of the critical infrastructure. They talk about both physical and digital aspects of the critical infrastructure. They talk about both cyber threats. They associated protection and sustainment of critical infrastructure to national security. They talk about how we can increase both the protection and the resilience. So you see there is a common theme in these passages from these two policies. Again, if we try to summarize the objectives of this executive order and policy directive, to strengthen the security and resilience, taking a holistic risk management approach. These are all the things that we have talked about all day today. So some of the reasons these policy directives are important for us to pay attention to. Let's look at the inside of these policies. For example, this is a table of contents of executive order. Yes, it tries to put in place a national policy dealing with protection and sustainment of critical infrastructure. It directs some of the federal agencies, such as DHS, to establish new capabilities. For example, better information sharing. It requires federal government agencies to worry about how privacy and civil liberties are safeguarded as new capabilities are put in place. It directs National Institute of Standards and Technology to develop a cybersecurity framework to help organizations to manage the risk to critical infrastructure. This is the table of contents of the Presidential Policy Directive 21. Again, its focus is all hazards, both physical and cyber. Its focus is both security and resilience of critical infrastructure. It tries to put on the books a national policy for security and resilience of critical infrastructure in an integrated fashion. It redefines the 16 sectors of critical infrastructure and gives us some national definitions for some of the terms that we've been using all throughout the day. I mentioned HSPD-7 from 2003 as a key example of a policy directive that affected some of the preparedness planning activities that everybody does. If you compare HSPD-7 to Policy Directive 21 from last year, we see some major changes. The focus has changed from protecting physical systems from terrorist attacks to protecting both physical and cyber infrastructure against all hazards, and both protection and operating under stress. So you see these policy directives change the focus from only dealing with physical systems and only because of terrorist attacks to a much broader field of both physical and cyber domains and all hazards. One of the key directions from these recent executive orders and policy directives was ordering or requesting NIST to develop a cybersecurity framework that a couple of our panel members commented on. This is a work that started last February, the day after the policy directive was issued, and is supposed to end next month by release of the final version of the framework. And as we heard from our two panel members from the Department of Energy and from the Department of Homeland Security, they are planning to use their existing derivatives from RMM as a mechanism to implement the requirements or the intention of this cybersecurity framework. So now this is a relationship you can see of use of maturity models, use of frameworks such as RMM to help satisfy the intentions of some of the outcomes of these policies and presidential policy directives. So I've just tried to sort of bring the subject to the front burner and argue that it's important for us, whether we are researchers or developers or practitioners or decision makers, to pay a little more attention to the policies that affect our areas of interest. So let me finish by summarizing a few points, and then leave you with some challenging questions that these policies don't yet address. So, if you look at the examples that I gave from a perspective of executive orders and policy directives over the last 40 or 50 years, most of them were issued right after a very bad event had taken place. The NCS were created right after the Cuban Missile Crisis. We put in a lot of policies in place right after September 11th and after the anthrax mailing. We expanded the emergency communication system after Hurricane Katrina. These two last policies, the Executive Order 1360-36 and PPD-21, were issued without any explicit incident having caused them to be issued. So maybe we are doing some forward-looking and being ahead of the curve. Another key summarization observation I want to make is that the focus has changed from protection of the physical systems from terrorist attacks to both protection and sustainment, both security and resilience of critical infrastructure from all hazards. So, I said I'm going to raise some questions that these policies don't yet address. Something that we all should start thinking about. And here are a couple of examples, or a couple of questions. So, if a bank is robbed, if there's armed robbery in a bank, none of us will be surprised if that armed robber is met by a deadly force by a security guard. Now, suppose instead of an armed physical robbery, that bank was being attacked by cybersecurity means. What should we expect that bank to do? Do we need policies and regulations governing that bank being actively doing some cyber defense? Now, there has been some recent discussions about the subject that maybe people are thinking about active defense against cyber attacks might be appropriate sometimes by some organization. But we haven't really answered the question fully yet. Needs a lot more discussion. Another example. We will not be surprised if our defense forces respond with kinetic means if a foreign government attacks our buildings. But what should we expect if a foreign government uses cybersecurity means to attack our banks? Do we need policies that deal with that question? Another question that I think we need a national discussion about. Again, we can read in the headlines that the subject is beginning to be discussed. So, I think it's important for us to pay attention to the policies dealing with resiliency and cybersecurity. And there are some important questions that our existing policies do not yet answer that require some national discussion. And Shane, I'll stop at this point.
Okay, with that, we'll start our Q&A with Nader. Question from Brenda asking, the last directives were after Hurricane Sandy, so couldn't you consider that as part of the reaction?
It could. My study of these two last policies tells me that the efforts that resulted in issuing of these policies were taking place before Hurricane Sandy actually came on board. So I have not been able to fully associate Hurricane Sandy as a primary cause for these two policy directives. But on the other hand, the more important question is the flavor and the scope of these policies are of much more interest to study and ask questions.